The Monday Morning Tech Chat Show is brought to you by Audible. Audible is, of course, the premier audiobook service, perfect for folks who want their books read to them. Thousands and thousands of titles to choose from in all genres, sci-fi, fantasy, biographies, history, thrillers, mysteries, and more. We've got a great offer for listeners on this podcast, 2 free audiobooks when you sign up. And those books are yours to keep even if you decide to cancel your Audible subscription, which is $14.95 a month and gives you a free book every month of your choosing, as well as some other fun perks. Membership has its privileges. Hit up bit.ly/geekbookclub to start your free trial and get those 2 free books on lock. Once again, bit.ly/geekbookclub. And now, let's get into the show. All right, I believe this means we are live. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, tech fans of all shapes and sorts and sizes and persuasions, welcome to another Monday Morning Tech Chat Show on the SGGQA podcast channel. I am Juan Carlos Bagnell, some gadget guy, the SGG of this terribly named podcast series, and the QA, SGGQA, stands for question and answer, obviously, as I forgot the name of my own terrible podcast. Because I like this show to be an interactive discussion of the week's top tech news stories, tech in politics, tech in health, gadgets and entertainment, all the fun stuff, all the serious stuff. I like to host my show on a Monday as we've had the whole week to kind of go through some of those stories. Maybe there was breaking news over the weekend and give us a little time to sort out our feelings as we follow up on those top tech stories. We don't want to just talk about something once and then forget about it and then let companies do whatever they want or let, you know, people arrive at bad conclusions based on incomplete data. Yes. So, I'm already seeing some crazy activity in the live chat. Obviously, we're all kind of recouping from talking about CES 2020 in Las Vegas. I actually sat this one out. I've gone to 12, so I figured I'd give myself a break. But I was still producing a lot of content for CES, showing up on a couple different podcasts, working with the Newegg crew to kind of keep some videos up and running. There was still plenty of CES activity, even though I was able to do it from the comfort of the Gadget Lab. But we've got a great crew already in the live chat. I'm seeing Natakun, I'm seeing Matt Tyler, I'm seeing Aditya Anil, Sam Vazikos, and a special shout out to LFA Reviews. LFA actually did a really super cool tech reviewer meet and greet at one of please drop me a comment in the live chat, Jeff. You were at the One More booth to do a meetup. I'm pretty sure. Was that where you were? But anyway, one of my favorite audio tech reviewers doing some cool audio tech hands-on stuff at CES. And it's always exciting when I get to hear someone's reports from CES, when they get to do something cool like that at CES. So, we've got a lot of everything to cover in this week's show. I've got a lot of housekeeping to kind of plow through. We're all kind of getting back into the groove. Even I'm finally producing content again from taking a little time off over the holidays. We've got a lot of news to cover. Some concerning news stories, especially when we're talking about people in our society who are already a bit vulnerable, not having the best options for things like privacy and security. And then I still, at the second half of this podcast, to talk about actual gadgets and stuff, I do want to recap just a few of the bigger announcements. CES is such a hard show to pin down, like what is the one vibe or what was the winner of CES, but there were still a handful of other announcements and reveals at CES that I think are interesting to talk about. Not necessarily my list of the winners and losers of CES, just things I thought were kind of cool. We front-loaded that with last week's podcast. I talked about some of the early press releases that I'd gotten from CES. And now I kind of want to wrap that up the second half now that we're through that week and we can look back on the week that was CES 2020. Jeff, you were at the One More booth. One More had a great showing. So if you've been following the world of true wireless earbuds, the One More Stylish are some of the best options at any price point for going true wireless earbuds. And they have a new competitor out with active noise canceling. So those of you who have been following this podcast or kind of following me on social media, I've written the script for the official announcement of hashtag 2020 hearing. I'll be shooting that video today and hopefully having it out sometime this week just to kick off what's going to be a whole year of talking about ear health, hearing health, and what technology we can use to make that better. I'm hoping to have one more on board for a product review because those active noise canceling earbuds look real trick. They look really nice. So, what are my over unders for housekeeping? Matt Tyler saying 20 minutes. Natakun getting real specific, 16.5 minutes. Aditya Anil, I see your 20 minutes and bet 14 minutes and 58 seconds for housekeeping. Chatty boy just jumping in to say, hey, 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 chatty boy. Aditya, no, I didn't want to blow the surprise by shouting out the 2020 hearing on Twitter earlier today. One, no, this is something I'm going to need a lot of help with from the community. The more time I spend on hearing health, the less time I'm going to be spending on the more popular gadget reviews and, you know, trending topic styles of tech videos. And I'm going into this year knowing that a lot of this hearing health, hearing tech and, preventative behavioral examinations of how we listen to audio will probably not be super hard-hitting videos. I'm going to need a lot of help from this community to spread the word, and I don't feel we can start soon enough. It's taken me a little while longer than I wanted, especially after 2 weeks of laryngitis, to get this stuff off the ground. So any mention of this, really trying to use that hashtag 2020 hearing, trying to share this content is going to be greatly appreciated because it's stuff that people don't really seem to want to hear, or maybe they can't hear because they use AirPods. So let's jump into some housekeeping. I've got my list up here real quick. All right, it's 9:07 in the AM. I'm going to see if we can get this done fast. He said as slowly as he possibly could. All right. Housekeeping, going into screen share now. First off, I just want to shout out, it is always the highlight of a tech month or a tech week or a tech year when I get to join the folks at This Week in Tech for All About Android. Episode 454 was recorded last Tuesday. And we had a pretty robust conversation. Again, we were covering some CES 2020 news, talking Galaxy S10 Lite, Note 10 Lite, TCL. We talked about the OnePlus concept phone with the electrochromic glass. We talked about a few things that we're going to be talking about in this podcast, too. But I also have to throw the special shout out. If you go to twit.to/AAAPoll, AAAPOLL 454, and I'll leave that link in the show notes for this video on somegadgetguy.com. I'll copy that link right now for the live chat, for those of you in the live chat. I need everyone to go vote for Undead Horde. That was my app for the arena. Is one of my all-time favorite game developers. They make these awesome arcade dual-stick shooters. They're the developers who made Neon Chrome and Tesla versus Lovecraft. And I'm still playing a ton of Undead Horde. It's a great little unit management top-down arcadey game. So that was my app for the arena. It needs your vote for This Week in Tech. But again, also listen to the whole show. I love joining this crew. I've been such a huge fan of Leo Laporte and This Week in Tech. And it's one of those funny things where, you know, when you listen to podcasts, you're kind of having like an internal conversation with the podcast host. And I listen to All About Android is one of the shows that I genuinely listen to almost every week. And so it's so surreal when I'm listening to Flo and Ron and Jason have a conversation and I say something and then they reply to me. I've still not gotten over that little bit of giddiness at the top of every one of those shows because I'm such a big fan. All right. Moving right along. After This Week in Tech, I wrote up an editorial where I feel 2020 is also going to be a year of media literacy. And so I wrote up this editorial following some analyst numbers. The title is Cheap Phones Won Christmas 2019 or Consumers Don't Listen to Tech Reviewers. And I feel like this is going to be an increasingly important discussion point. Over this next year of tech, we're going to see a heavy front load on the most popular topics. And I feel the tech fan community, the tech enthusiast community still doesn't fully grasp just how manipulated that review conversation is. When you're looking at how much effort it takes to produce a tech review or any kind of tech content, and then how much money you might make based on the popularity of that gadget, it severely alters the landscape of what gadgets get talked about and what gadgets get positive reviews. And I feel like when we really look at consumer sales data, it doesn't vibe with the preponderance of coverage for ultra-premium expensive gadgets when the most popular gadgets from December 1st to December 31st were cheap and older phones. So looking at Apple sales numbers, the iPhone 11 was one of the top picks, but only made up a very small percentage of the overall number of gadgets sold, where the iPhone XR, iPhone 7, and iPhone 8 all outsold, individually outsold, the iPhone 11 Pro Max. And the iPhone 8 Plus, iPhone 6 Plus, iPhone 7 Plus, and iPhone 10 all individually outsold the smaller iPhone 11 Pro. So we need to have a reckoning. Like there needs to be a market correction at some point for tech reviews as information versus tech reviews as confirmation entertainment. So there's an article that I posted about that. I'm going to be talking more about the state of reviewing in 2020. I'm going to try not to make it the cranky silliness of every review that I produce, but I want to do more standalone examinations of the industry that I'm a part of, because I also feel like I've got a desk that's full of ultra premium smartphones. I also need to examine my own behavior, but I'm a pretty small player in this tech space. So for as much as I can lead the charge to talk about cheaper phones, I feel like we all need to just be aware of how our media is being managed or manipulated by these various algorithmic forces. Some fun stuff. I recently got to test drive a Segway Ninebot S. And, being a former dance minor in college, I was really happy that I didn't wipe out. First couple minutes were really shaky. Unfortunately, we didn't get any video of my very, very first step up on a Segway. But after about 5 minutes, I think I was pretty comfy. All of the talking to camera stuff was shot in the gadget lab, but all of the field footage was shot on the LG G8X. So that was a pretty fun little romp. Also, getting some more hands-on time with some non-smartphone gear. Another goal that I had for 2019 that I didn't really fulfill, but something I'm also going to try and push a bit more into 2020, is spreading the love out. I want to diversify a bit from only spending time talking about phones. And I've been spending the last couple weeks playing with an Intel Nook. This is the new 10th generation Intel Nook, and I'm starting out at the entry level. This is the cheapest Core i3 UHD Intel integrated graphics, and let me get this out of the way here. And not only just, I plugged it in and I installed Windows on it, and look, it's a tiny computer. Episodes 126 and 125 of this podcast were streamed over that Intel Nook. So I've got a full video breakdown just looking at, some of the internals. It's a tiny, tiny little form factor PC. Can I move it off my desk here? It's kind of plugged in rough. Hold on. I
I gotta unplug that. Oh, the Ethernet's stuck. Okay.
So and this is it. I mean, I kind of teased this and I showed it off. I think I showed it off last week. But I finally have the proper video out, looking at the full breakdown, taking it apart, taking it open, popping it open. I've got a Plex Store 1 terabyte drive in there. I've got Oloi, reverse YOLO, 32 gig of RAM in there. And I've got some great gaming footage. I mean, I didn't show a ton, but if you play arcade games, especially like Cuphead, Ape Out, Tesla versus Lovecraft, that little box is absolutely killer. And it's just a step behind the most expensive consoles in terms of gaming performance while still being a full-fledged PC. So pretty impressive for such an inexpensive entry level. So I don't know. Yes. One last story for housekeeping. I might get this done in under 12 minutes. Let's see. Get that out of the way. And screen share. I also have to send a shout out. Yesterday, I got to spend some lovely time with the Brosifs, Demir Frank and Andrew Wallace, Fat Produce, who often joins the live chat late. We just spent some time kind of, again, very prescient, very present topics, talking about CES. And for the three of us, we very routinely head down that path of what's going on with tech reviews. it's going to be that existential crisis conversation that I think we're all sort of having right now. What to do about tech reviews? What's going on with our tech reviews? And why is it that, you know, when you look around, tech reviewers seem to be way off the pulse? So I was happy to join them for an early Sunday morning chat, early my time. It was sort of regular time for them. And you can also catch that, too. I forget how long this was, like another 2 hour conversation. So I don't get to join them as often as I'd like to, but they're good people. So I think you should also give them a listen, too. So that's going to do it for housekeeping. What did we hit 11 minutes. All right. Good job, me. All right. I'm seeing Boang Bite. I'm seeing Kyle Ruggles waves to the room. Last week, I think Kyle was saying he wasn't feeling well, so I hope Kyle's feeling better this week. And I'm still, as you can hear, a little gross. And just as you get over laryngitis, like your daughter brings home new illness from preschool, and that's we're kind of fighting another round of just minor goopiness. Ooh, Zach 2 says I hit 9:35 on his stopwatch. I should put up like a counter. I'm gonna see if I can build a counter into my OBS setup and like have a proper how long did it really take me to get through housekeeping. But thanks for the confirmation. I was trying to do the math loosely in my head. Yes, all of the stories that I just talked about posted up on somegadgetguy.com, or I'm also going to have all of the links to all of the stories that we talk about on the show notes for this episode. So you can catch that, of course, on somegadgetguy.com, or when the audio podcast goes live, any of your favorite audio podcast services. So Sam 20, yeah, kids, the ultimate disease catchers. So children are pretty gross. They're little incubators. We love them madly, but my daughter is still trying to get the hang of not coughing into your face when she's got to like clear her own throat, which is hilarious and super gross. Sam again. I used to quarantine myself from my girls all the time. I'm hoping that these types of interactions are making my immune system more robust, you know, like my daughter's bringing this home. I'm going to feel like crap for a couple days, but then when I go out in public, oh boy, I'm ready to tackle anything that regular adults could send my way. All right. We got to get into some news. I mean, we have to, like, we've got to cover this stuff, right, guys? It's funny. So I want to kick off with a CES story. This is actually a little bit notable, even though it didn't get a ton of coverage. And I'm actually frustrated to have to talk about this, because I think it's telling that this appearance at CES didn't get much notable coverage. I believe for 2017 and 2018, Ajit Pai, the chairman of the FCC, has declined invitations to speak at CES and often citing security threats. There was a threat issued against my life, and I can't go to a public forum like CES to talk about the industry that I'm supposed to be regulating. And while I'm sure there are some security issues with a figure like Ajit Pai showing up in a public forum, I very much doubt that it's such an insurmountable situation that he hasn't been able to go. But he did actually manage to show up at CES 2020 to basically keep fronting the same misinformation that he's been doling out since he was installed as the chairman of the FCC. So Motherboard, Vice, they've got an article just kind of breaking down what he was there to talk about. Ajit Pai still thinks killing net neutrality was a brilliant idea. And I'm going to throw that in the live chat here for those of you who are following along. Excuse me. From the article written up by Carl Bode, Ajit Pai continues to double down on the claim that net neutrality was a huge boon for American consumers, even if supporting evidence for that claim remains largely non-existent. So he mentions, quote, since we made the decision in 2017, broadband speeds are up 60%, according to Ookla. Infrastructure investment is up. More Americans are getting connected to the internet than ever before, Pai said during a stage panel with Gary Shapiro, CEO and president of the Consumer Technology Association, the producer of CES. And then the article goes on to do a pretty good job of linking actual studies that show there's really no link. Like, there's no correlation to killing net neutrality and seeing improvements in broadband infrastructure or in data transmission speeds. And in fact, we've even seen that it could be kind of a lie that there was more investment in infrastructure when net neutrality was installed under Tom Wheeler. And it's always funny, one of the other points that they bring up in this article, and click through some of these links because they do a really good job of citing their sources here. Quote from Ajit Pai, quote, more fiber was laid in 2019 to homes and businesses in the United States than in any year since they've been keeping records, breaking the record we set in 2018, Pai told conference attendees. But according to Vice, much of the recent fiber growth Pai cites was thanks to frustrated towns and cities building their own broadband networks, which is something his FCC actively opposes. Other fiber growth was thanks to conditions affixed to AT&T's 2015 merger with DirecTV by the previous FCC, which required it deploy fiber to 12.5 million homes that otherwise would never have received it. So he's taking credit for the fiber installation and the fiber rollouts that he actively fought. Boing by up to 60% faster, skeptical emoticon. And LFA reviews, yet we still can't get proper infrastructure in California. Go figure. Not to be fair, California has its own bureaucratic mess to sort out. We have been, I think we're now 7 years into a 5-year analysis of infrastructure rollout for fiber to home, at least here in Los Angeles. That might be an LA County thing, not a California thing. But I remember reporting on the LA City Council. I think it was about 7 or 8 years ago, saying we're going to do a 5-year study, and nothing happened. From Q3 Becker, I'm not a violent guy, so let me just say that I would do some stuff to his giant mug. Unfortunately, his giant Reese's Pieces mug did not make an appearance on the CES stage. Again, one of the reasons why I don't like bringing up these kinds of stories is because it's a platform for him to kind of repeat the same misinformation and the same not quite true analysis of what's happening in the telecommunications space. But I'm also glad that there wasn't any kind of fervored reporting on his appearance there. It was kind of a non-issue. I think we've all started, especially in the tech space. I mean, if you're really following these types of stories, I think we've all gotten the sense that he's a bad actor, literally and figuratively. Like he is installed in the FCC to be a diversion. We can all rant and rail at how terrible a chairman he is, but we're going to expend all of our anger and frustration on Ajit Pai hate. And then that's going to be a smokescreen or a shield for all of the telecommunications companies in instituting terrible policy for our telecommunications infrastructure. So when we don't flip out about Ajit Pai, we keep our eye on the prize, looking at how we can arrive at better results for the citizens of this country, then I feel like that's also kind of a victory. The main reason why I wanted to point this story out is I think we're all pretty hip to the game now. It kind of doesn't matter what he says. We know it's not really in earnest. We know he's not really participating in good faith. We know he's kind of just a troll to instigate, hateful rhetoric. And then from there, it kind of proves their point. Oh, and see, like, we just got a bunch of internet nerds that are they're making threats against my life. Oh, clutching my pearls. But we also need to look at terrible business policy, too. Whenever we bring up something like this, I also want to bring up other stories about, you know, AT&T really lobbying hard for tax breaks, but then laying off tons of people. That money just went to enriching the top brass. It didn't really go into infrastructure, and it didn't really go into in any of the labor force. So all of these claims of, well, we need lower taxes so that we can pay our workers better and hire more people and roll out better infrastructure, that's all a lie too. So we've got to stay on the translating terrible political doublespeak train, but then we also actually need to go back and look at, well, what policy was actually instituted and what were the ramifications of that policy? Because I want to throw this back. This was the story that Ars Technica put out on my birthday in 2018, and it was something we talked about in 2019 too. So when Ajit Pai is out there talking about infrastructure and, oh, we rolled out more, this is the kind of stuff that happens behind the scenes where ISPs and lobbyists say they can't expand broadband unless they get more tax dollars. But they don't want to be regulated like a utility. They just want all the public funds so that they don't spend any of their profits to improve the services that they promised that they would improve. But then they want to privatize all of the money that they make. So we wish we could. We wish we could make your internet faster, but we need your tax dollars to do it. And then when we get your tax dollars, we're still going to raise your rates. We're still going to throttle your connections. We're still going to put in broadband caps when we can. We're still going to fight local governments to make sure there's zero competition. And then we're going to take all of that money out of your community and then just sit on it. Because we're not really going to use it to continue improving. That's what we need your tax dollars for. So this is the fallacy. This is the lie. Net neutrality doesn't really have much of anything to do with broadband infrastructure. Not in this current debate that we're having about telecommunication services versus information services. So I'm glad that I've got at least a crew of people here that have been kind of untangling this stuff, because we can still debate. Like, I feel like there's a lot of gray area and a lot of spectrum for what some solutions should be. But I think we're at least all kind of agreeing that the problem is this type of false communication as to what the state of our broadband really looks like. Yeah. Well, Boeing Byte says just nationalize broadband. I mean, the frustrating thing is it's mostly built on taxpayer dollars anyway. At some point, you look at every single successful fiber rollout that happened as a municipal broadband initiative and how the for-profit sector doesn't do anything close to that at anywhere near the price. And I know a lot of people who follow me disagree with some of my stances on that. But I don't think a nationalized broadband network could be any worse. In fact, has plenty of potential to be way better than the current sectors that we have. This was a story, moving right along. I didn't realize when I was putting my show notes together that I've basically got like five links from Ars Technica for the news block today. So I tried moving some stuff around, but they've got great write-ups. And I was sourcing most of these from Reddit. It just so happened that I kind of caught all of these at the same time. Okay. So this one is actually concerning. Again, just like when we talk about broadband infrastructure, the people who get burned the worst are already the most vulnerable citizens and consumers. You want to talk about rollout for rural areas in the United States. And if you leave that up to for-profit companies, then they're going to tell you how they can't make money off of poor people, so screw them. They don't get to be a part of the 21st century. Even when we try to help low-income citizens in this country, that comes with a heavier burden. That comes with a heavier responsibility to get this stuff right. And it's very often the community of people who we don't advocate for very aggressively. They're the people that fall through the cracks. They're the people that just get ignored. This isn't hot political commentary. It's not like the healthcare debate and gets real sexy and MSNBC can put up infographics. Just getting people connected and getting their voices somewhat accessible in the 21st century is a monumental challenge and one that can be pretty expensive. So when we see stories like this, it can be really disheartening because we're actually trying, but we're not quite succeeding. From Zach too, rural areas. I can't say the word rural. You guys can make fun of me all you want. By way of Ars Technica, written up by Dan Gooden. Let me get the link and I'll share that in the live chat. U.S. government-funded Android phones come pre-installed with unremovable malware. This story makes me really sad because this is a program, the FCC's Lifeline Assistance Program, which is under attack. Again, the current administration and the current head of the FCC are putting numerous barriers into broadband connectivity programs because there might be a couple people out there defrauding the government for $10 to $15 a month. So we've got to make it harder for all of the poor people out there to get any kind of assistance in their local communities to getting online because a couple bad apples. That's true. And this is also another one of these programs. The Lifeline Assistance Program is just a way to subsidize the grossest, cheapest Android phones that none of us would really want to use, but might be the only affordable options for consumers in certain areas where a lack of competition leads to way heavier prices, way higher prices on this kind of coverage. Let me screen share back into the article here real quick. Hey folks, are you getting bored of the current collection of tech and geek commentary on the internet? Is the discussion of new electronics feeling a bit stale? Do you want to find some fresh voices to add to your subscription queue? Check out the community on r glowing rectangles on Reddit. Now, this subreddit was built to help new voices in the tech community find more audience, and we need your support. Sharing, commenting, and those precious, tasty upvotes. Reddit can radically help a content creator expand their reach. Do you know a producer who deserves more attention? Do you just want to find fun new stuff? Head on over to reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles and share or browse to your heart's content. Once again, reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles, and let's build something cool together. An Android phone subsidized by the U.S. government for low-income users comes pre-installed with malware that can't be removed without making the device cease to work, researchers reported on Thursday. The UMX U686CL is provided by Virgin Mobile's Assurance Wireless program. Assurance Wireless is an offshoot of the Lifeline Assistance Program, an FCC plan that makes free or government-subsidized phone service available to millions of low-income families. Program is often referred to as the Obama phone because it expanded in 2008 when President Obama took office. The UMX U686CL runs Android and is available for $35 to qualifying users. Researchers at Malwarebytes said on Thursday that the device comes with some nasty surprises. Representatives of Sprint, the owner of Virgin Mobile, meanwhile said it didn't believe the apps were malicious. So we're looking at Trojans and a sort of a hidden ad network Trojan dropper that when almost the exact same code is discovered on PCs, it shows up as a significant security threat. In trying to do my due diligence for the story, I literally could not find a picture of the UMX U686CL. This is an ultra low cost device that I don't believe has been seriously reviewed by any of the sort of elite tech reviewers or tech press. So I went to the Assurance Wireless side of Virgin Mobile, and I'm going to go back into a screen share here now too. Aww. And Matt Tyler with the gift subs on the Twitch. Matt, you're such a sweetheart. Thank you so much for supporting production on this live stream. And Kyle Ruggles, a phone that kind of doesn't sort of exist. So we're talking about Unimax, and currently on the Assurance Wireless website, I can find the U673 and the U683CL, but I can't find a 686CL. But we're talking about phones that were maybe competitive specs wise, I don't know, in the Android 2 days, maybe the Android 4 days. The Unimax U683CL has a 5-inch touchscreen display. The resolution is 854 by 480, so it's a standard definition screen. It does have Bluetooth 4.1. And it can support micro SD cards up to 64 gigabytes with a 2000 milliamp hour battery. And it uses the Android Go operating system on an 8 gigabyte ROM with 1 gigabyte of RAM. So this is what the low cost access pricing looks like. Last year I reviewed a CoolPad. Alumnia, and wouldn't you know it, if you go to Assurance Wireless, you can find CoolPad, the uber low-cost Android Go smartphones. When I reviewed the CoolPad, it was a $40 phone when you bought it outright, and you can imagine what $40 sort of resembles in the smartphone space. I put out a video on the Alumnia, and obviously that's not one of my most viewed smartphone reviews. I ultimately found that it's a functional success. What the phone sets out to do for $40 is achieved. Like it does do what it claims to be able to do, but we're talking the bare minimum kind of smartphone connectivity. When we talk about entry-level devices and mid-ranger devices, and that conversation is lobster potted up, where a mid-range phone now is often more expensive than what a flagship device was 4 or 5 years ago. Where, you know, a $500 to $600 phone is a cheap phone by comparison to what the premium end of the market is. I feel like that's also led to a lopsided discussion on what entry level is, where $200 might be a bridge too far for someone to have their basic needs met in the telecommunications space. We're talking about people who are the most vulnerable, who might not have access or might not even have the credit to get some sort of phone lease on a $200 phone. So what do we do to make sure that those individuals don't disappear from society, that they don't fall through the cracks? This is also one of those situations where I feel like we should be doing a better job of talking about alternatives. At that level of connectivity, a Coolpad Illumnia or a Unimax with phone specs from 2015, 2014, maybe 2012, if you look at that screen resolution, instead of looking at devices like that and trying to make Android work at that phase, I also spent some time reviewing a KaiOS phone. And there's a flip phone with Google Assistant and Google Maps, and it performs probably better than what Android Go does on these super, super, super low-cost devices. And again, you can find it on carriers, on T-Mobile and on AT&T, for surprisingly cheap. So I'm disappointed. Right now, we're playing the pass the buck game, where the government is, rightfully, the government is putting funds towards Assurance Wireless. Assurance Wireless bid for this contract to get government funds to offer low-cost service, to subsidize this service. And then they've got to fill their portfolio with phones. And so using Virgin Media and Sprint's relationships to find manufacturers that are going to offer, you know, some really low-cost options, I'm sure not a lot of money or not a lot of effort was put into verifying and making sure that these were stable, secure, updated devices. When you go cheap, you often get sacrificed to the gods of updates and security. So Sprint is now running some damage control, saying, oh, yeah, well, we're looking at how these phones are subsidized, but we don't see any malware. We just see Trojans and ad bots. Well, that's a different word than malware. You can see, I mean, you can tell they're different because we use different words. If Trojans were malware, we would just say it was malware. from Boeing Byte, I kind of trust the cheaper Nokias these days. Another good example of a feature phone, which probably competes pretty handily against these full-fledged Android devices. I wish we had more options for some of that, like lower cost or more accessible priced solutions here in the United States. Kyle Ruggles, remember the days when they were talking about affordable laptops for schools before the time of netbooks or around the time? Now we have a touchscreen smartphone for that price. Get a standard flip phone. And from Tech Lovin' Mama, this is a great point. Thank you so much. And this is why older devices are still good to do videos about for those people who never had said device before, who want to know how well it works nowadays. I always feel like that's going to be an incredible debate as we go through these next couple years, as premium technology, the exciting stuff to talk about, continues to push into higher and higher price points, and consumers show significant fatigue at ultra premium portable gadgets that are increasingly fragile. The debate between an older flagship versus a purpose-built mid-ranger, now looking at an older mid-ranger versus a purpose-built entry-level phone, is an exciting conversation, because I still think there are good pros and cons, and it's good to have those different options. And from what we see here, I'd actually like some feedback on this. You've got a family member, rural area, can't afford a premium device. You've got a $50 target, $50. What can they get? and how well will it perform for them? TK and I tried to do this last year doing a cheap phone challenge. I mean, we did get some videos out. It was actually harder for us to put those videos together than I was really anticipating. And the solution that I found for buying a brand new device at around $50 was a tragic piece of e-waste. Like, getting that phone just reinforced, like, why I feel like there should be bigger punitive measures against manufacturers that make garbage. It was terrible. So I'd actually like to hear, like, what could you find? What would you do for that family member or that friend at $50 to try and get them connected in the most painless way possible? All right. Some other people talking about Virgin, Razer 2002 versus Razer 2020 flip phone comparison. From Sam, 20 miles, I'm using a 2018 mid-ranger now, and it's really good. From Tech Love and Mama, I got to ask them questions about them and what they need to determine that. But $50, yeah, that's tough when you're trying to go new. Tech Love and Mama, again, you're trying to add provisions on it. But the type of person who's stuck at $50, they're not on some kind of crazy awesome plan. A crazy awesome plan means that they've got to be able to pass a credit check. You know, so you're not $50 if you're $50 and you're subsidizing that through some kind of phone plan. I mean, $50 out the door. They're going to go and get a SIM card from a Walmart and put it into a phone, and they have $50 to spend. But they still want to be able to participate in the 21st century. And that's hard. It's really hard. Kyle Ruggles, I'd give them one of my old phones. But again, I've given lots of family members old phones and old review devices and stuff like that. I'm saying you're asked for purchasing device and look at how difficult it is to really broach that conversation. When we talk about a government program to subsidize, you're talking about people that don't have tech enthusiast relatives to just give them phones. And what they end up with is a compromised platform, which is insecure and could be potentially dangerous for their data when they're already the most vulnerable members of our society. And this is why we're having to play this game. We have to ask other questions, or will you be able to get this with a contract? Can you get a contract? Well, $50 with a contract, that's going to be easy. You know, like, this is increasingly difficult. And when we look at the numbers on the divide, we're talking about millions of Americans that fall into this kind of issue, and we don't have good answers for them. That, and when we do try, when we actually put tax dollars into this kind of an assistance program, we offer up solutions that are potentially dangerous for them to use. So again, it's not the sexiest thing to talk about, but these people need help. So we probably should be doing, myself included, a better job of finding them some kind of solutions. At $50, my recommendations would be some type of cool pad style device or something in KaiOS. Get a KaiOS flip phone. It's not going to be the sexiest. The camera is going to be kind of terrible, but you'll still have access to Google services, Google Assistant, Google Maps. You'll have a mini little app store that has other services that are fairly popular. You'll be able to tweet from it. It's got excellent speech to text capabilities. And it's kind of cool. I mean, in a very hipstery kind of way, to be rocking a flip phone in 2020. You know, like, we're seeing companies try and get back to that. So be ahead of the curve. Rock some KaiOS. from Matt Tyler, 50 new, absolutely nothing for $50. A secondhand market here is so good for Sony and LG. Kyle Ruggles, yeah, $50. I agree with you. I wouldn't recommend this unless they just use it for the basics, like no banking on their phones, etc. Just Facebook, Instagram, and browsing. LFA reviews, a Pixel 3a can be had for cheap, and it's a dope phone, but a Pixel 3a is still... What were the used prices that I saw on that? Like $250, $200? So that's great, but we're four times over the budget for a used phone on a Pixel 3a. You know, like my sister and her husband are up and coming, you know, science professionals, and they're making pretty good money for getting out of college. I think they're almost done paying off their student loans, which is super frustrating for how long it's taken my wife and I to pay off our student loans. But, you know, they bought Pixel 3As. Like, I think they're the perfect market for something like that, where they want a nice experience. They don't care about all the bells and whistles. They refuse to spend $1,000 on a smartphone, but they want a decent camera. They want something smooth, and they care about security updates. Pixel 3As, and I think they got them on special, so they got them for $300 each. Awesome. $600 for two phones. Someone's family budget for a smartphone, a phone for the family, might be $50. So we're off by $550 for a pair of Pixel 3As. Boeing Bike, KaiOS device review. When? It's on somegadgetguy.com. Look for KaiOS and you'll find my review of the Alcatel Flip Smart. Was that the one that it was? All right, moving right along. We've spent a lot of time on that. I do want to touch on this other Ars Technica article. I gotta get a... Again, guys, I'm seeing awesome suggestions for premium entry level. From Xiaomi. Yeah, $200 Xiaomi phones are badass. That's still $200. again, Kyle, the Realme 10. Yeah, 64 gig. Same camera as on the OnePlus 7 Pro. Periscope selfie, 64 gigs, 4 gigs of RAM, OLED, $220. That is a monster deal for $220. It's still not $50. This is so hard. I mean, and I'm not picking on you guys. I don't have great solutions either, because I don't think those great solutions really exist, because we've been front loading the rest of the market for the premium and now sliding into the mid range, making the mid range more expensive. All right, another Ars Technica article here. U.S. finally prohibits ISPs from charging for routers that they don't provide. It's disappointing that we needed a law to do this. It's not fraud. Well, it is now, but it wasn't before. Written up by John Brodkin. Let me get to the article. Let me drop it in the chat real quick. A new U.S. law prohibits broadband and TV providers from charging rental fees for equipment that customers have provided themselves. Even by the low customer service standards of the cable and telecom industries, requiring customers to pay a monthly fee for equipment they own is pretty rude, but that's exactly what Frontier Communications does to its customers, as we wrote in July 2019. Frontier customers who use routers they own themselves must still pay Frontier $10 a month in a Wi-Fi router fee, even if the router they use is fully compatible with the service and requires no additional work on Frontier's part. As Frontier's website says, its customers are forced to pay, quote, a monthly lease fee for your Frontier router or modem, whether you use it or not. End quote. That statement makes it sound like Frontier automatically provides the device to all customers, but the customer in Texas we wrote about never received a router from Frontier and was still required to pay the fee. This is the current state of our telecommunications regulatory industry. I mean, FCC or FTC, this was not illegal. this sort of perpetrated fraud in charging customers for things that they didn't get, totally fine, and snuck in under a whole classification of additional fees. One of the other things that actually comes from this, and please read through the rest of the article, is that additionally in this bill, we're still fighting ISPs to force them to detail all of the expenses in a customer's bill. And so what just got passed, well, hopefully, probably not. It's not really going to change ISPs' behavior, but it's at least the groundwork for some type of legal action against ISPs that do this, where they have to break down the individual things that you're getting charged for. And even that is a welcome but ludicrous victory to have in the year 2020. Like, we shouldn't have to fight this hard just for them to detail what our bill actually represents. What is it that we're getting charged for? And they've been able to hide behind it because we don't have an FTC that can really fight. As long as it's in the terms of service, the FTC can't really do anything. And this is ground where the FCC should be active in policing this stuff. But we all know what's going on with the FCC. Sorry, going back to the other story, Tech Love and Mama has a great point here. The thing about referring to used, most people don't know how to shop for used, so they would need someone to help them through all the steps. Even with finding new budget plans and phones, most people just jump into something and then they regret afterwards because they don't know what they were really buying. And Kyle Ruggles' reply is awesome. This could be a good service. Geek for Hire. Geek for Hire, an independent group of geeks who will look and investigate ish for you with different tiers of support. And then we'll also charge you for modems that you don't use, because apparently that used to be legal. So it's fine. No, we want Geeks for Hire to be a reputable service. We don't want it to be like ISPs. Goran Petrovic, Sony will quit smartphone business. Latest news. If someone's got a link on that, someone hook that link up, because I'll add that to the show notes right now. But anyway, baby steps, some progress. Our FCC isn't going to do anything about it, but at least we've got some laws to say you can't defraud your customers, ISPs, and then hopefully some type of correction will manage to satisfy that. Hold on. Okay. People are saying I've got to Google this Sony news immediately. We're gonna take a brief pause here and look up Sony smartphone business news. I see LG believes that smartphones will finally be profitable by the end of 2021. Good job, LG. I'm not seeing any breaking news on just. Oh, are you guys just trying to disrupt my stream? What the heck? Come on, man. It's Goran. That's not a joke. Come on. I run a news podcast. If you're telling me there's breaking news, that's kind of a not fun thing to pump the brakes on the whole podcast. Everyone say boo, Goran. No, I'm serious. I want to see Boo Goran in the live chat. Everyone, I am not continuing on in this live stream until I see some Boo Goran. I can sit here all day. DCJ Reviews, Boo Goran, Matt Tyler, Boo Goran, LFA. Goran, Boo Goran. That's right, Goran, you boo yourself. Good. Okay. We can move on. One last bit of news. We've been talking about some of the bills going up in state legislatures. Sorry. That was the funniest thing I think has ever happened on my podcast. most recently, we talked about the CCPA, the California Consumer Protection Act. How that's going to be changing up some of the relationships with consumers and with mega data-driven corporations. We're still finding our footing on what the full ramifications of this bill are going to be. Some of the language in the bill is still open to interpretation in ways that I'm not sure we're going to see the full fallout of how companies will need to do business in the 21st century. But it's already having an impact. Especially in terms of disclosure. And if nothing else comes from the CCPA, the thing I'll be most excited about is just making sure consumers have more information on how their information is being sold. So one of the first stories to come out of the CCPA is actually about something that I don't think any of us would have had on our radar. Again, this is a positive benefit of this type of regulation in the market, making sure we just know how corporations are using our data. And it's for all of you folks out there who are signed into Samsung Pay. This is a story coming by way of XDA developers written up by Max Weinbach. You can now opt out of having your Samsung Pay data sold. Since the introduction of Samsung Pay on the Galaxy S8, this is a great service. This is one of those delineating services from Samsung that LG has only just caught up on. Their own payment processing service and using MagStripe technology. It is embarrassing how many places in Southern California still don't have good tap and pay services, but you can swipe your phone on a traditional credit card machine and MagStripe will process just like, you know, sort of an NFC-based tap and pay. For all of the deals and the rewards programs that get put into Samsung Pay, apparently they just never needed to disclose that they were taking your purchasing data and selling it to third parties. So now, thanks to the CCPA, when you go into your Samsung Pay privacy controls, you can opt out of them selling your data. Now, of course, you get the warning. Some Samsung Pay features won't work when Do Not Sell is enabled. But I'm one of those people where I don't really much care about, you know, like getting points and, you know, maybe I'll get a coupon or get some money off at a retailer that I don't shop at. When I have a credit card in my phone, it's just the convenience of being able to tap and pay and get on with my day. Or occasionally, like, it's so funny, like, I feel safer leaving the house with my phone sometimes than if I forget to take my wallet with me. This isn't something I would have expected, you know? This isn't something that would have been on my radar. I would have had every expectation even reading through the terms of service, which, I mean, let's be honest, if I skim that, it's a quick skim at best, that Samsung has this all locked up, and that's how they got approvals, and that's why they were so far ahead of the curve over LG and some of the other competitors in the space, that this stuff would just be locked down. But now that we've got legislation in one of the world's largest economies in one state in the United States, now they've got to disclose this stuff. And that, yeah, your data was just being sold off to third-party retailers and other organizations so that Samsung could get better perks for Samsung Pay. So now you can turn that stuff off. And I'm going to say that that's a victory. I'm not saying you should turn it off if you enjoy the perks that you get from Samsung Pay, but at least now you know your data isn't being contained in a Samsung bucket. Your data is being used to help subsidize the, you know, and make additional profits for this service that Samsung has created. Aditi Anil replying to Kyle Ruggles, the default is set up so that you sell your purchasing patterns. You don't opt in to these rewards programs. You have to opt out of your data being sold. And I agree with Q3 Becker. The opt out should be the default. And to Q3 Becker's point, so now that we know that Samsung was leveraging consumer data in this fashion, I'm actually somewhat confident that LG Pay is probably doing something similar, that every single payment service that rewards consumer behavior probably has some component buried in their terms of service. I read through LG Pay's terms of service, and I can't find anything specifically highlighting third-party utilization of the data generated by LG Pay. But I won't be surprised if in a couple months there's a tiny little press release about LG Pay also offering some similar disclosure or some similar opt-out program. We live in a data-centric, data is the lubrication of our economy, and we're going to have a reckoning. Like, there needs to be a giant market correction on how pervasive this this behavior is for selling off our data. Kyle Ruggles, dun, dun, dun. From Natacoon61, does this apply to the standalone Samsung Pay Watch 2, like all Samsung Pay? I would imagine that this is all under one payments umbrella. So if you're using Samsung Pay in any capacity, I don't believe they have different or separate programs for different devices. Sam, I have LG Pay on my G8X, but Bank of America isn't on the supported list. LG Pay has been struggling to get more banks and services set up. I was so lucky that my Miles card was one of the launch partners. So I've been able to use it. It works great. It really does. I love Magstripe payments because, again, it's so silly how long it's taken in North America to get good tap and pay coverage everywhere. But yeah, they're definitely lagging on getting new banks and credit unions set up. Just a quick interjection here, folks. I love highlighting good work and talented people, producers and writers who deserve more attention. So here's a quick word from someone making cool stuff on the internet, and I hope you check out what they have to offer.
The Android Police Podcast comes at you 3 times a week to talk about the latest in Android news and to chat with our colleagues in tech media about wider subjects like the auto industry and what we do at trade shows. And we also do a fun Q&A stream each week, too. Catch us live on twitch.tv/AndroidPolice or listen anywhere you get your podcasts.
And good. Oh, and, we got Kyle Ruggles and Tech Lovin' Mama talking about starting up an actual service to help people buy electronics more safely. Kyle Ruggles, Tech Lovin' Mama, you guys get something off the ground, and I will help promote your new initiative to getting that stuff done. So let me take another sip of water here. We got to take a quick little break. That's the end of the news block. Sorry, I should have prefaced that. I spent a lot more time on low cost phone security in a JitPi than I'd really intended to. But we want to take just a minute here. Every week we talk about the subreddit. Every podcast has a subreddit. A lot of subreddits are set up to share interesting links to news stories that they can talk about. Some subreddits are just sort of fan sites where fans can talk about how great the podcast is. I have significant concerns about the future of reviewing and tech commentary and how different services that help distribute our content are also manipulating how viewers get our content. And so my subreddit is set up to try and help promote content creators who their audience feel deserve more attention. It could be an established channel with a ton of viewers, but maybe they aren't doing so well lately. It could be an up-and-coming channel that hasn't reached its monetization cap. There really isn't a dividing line. I just don't feel like, if you've got a YouTube channel that gets, that has like tens of millions of subscribers and they make terrible explained videos, then you probably don't need help sharing the word on those types of channels. So if you go to reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles, that's my subreddit. And I really want to make this an engine to help distribute and promote people who are making good stuff and deserve more attention, that they deserve more eyeballs on their content. So every week we detail some of the top stories, the top three from our glowing rectangles. I'm going to go back into screen share here. And okay, first off, I just got to preface this. When you look at CES videos on YouTube, there was a weight towards very, very popular topics. A lot of commentary on some gaming stuff, on monitors and laptops, and oh, look at all the crazy appliances and the future of like living room tech. The undisputed winner of CES 2020 on our glowing rectangles was TCL. The number one story of the last week. This is from Zach Talks Tech. TCL is shaking up the market with the TCL 10L, 10 Pro, and 10 5G. Some new smartphones coming by way of TCL directly. I'm actually not gonna build a big TCL chunk into this podcast because I'd like you to watch a few of these other videos. People, and especially from people that were actually there. Zach was on the ground. You went hands-on with these phones. I'm really excited. I'm very positive on TCL branding their own devices. I haven't felt this way since the early days of HTC. HTC used to be an ODM for a bunch of Windows Mobile labels. Like AudioVox used to make Windows Mobile PDA phones. And then when HTC started putting their own label on phones, those phones got way better. TCL builds phones for other labels like BlackBerry. They're the hardware manufacturer for BlackBerry phones, for the little Palm phone. They're the main the source behind Alcatel devices. And now they're stepping out of those shadows and putting their own company label on their own products. I'm very excited to see what they can do, and especially because they're going to have, I think, a tighter focus on premium mid-range. I think they're going to be a driving force for getting 5G to lower price points. I'm talking way too much. You should go watch Zach's video. I can't help myself. I'm excited about it. But that was also the excitement of the people who were actually there and making videos on this stuff. And the community at Glowing Rectangles, all about it. Now, the number two top viewed story at Glowing Rectangles is Gary Explains. Gary Explains is a regular in the top 10 every week. He makes Explains videos on topics that are actually worth explaining. And this is going to be something that's near and dear to my heart. We're getting improvements to Bluetooth audio connectivity. So the Bluetooth SIG group, I don't know how you say that, but the standards group for Bluetooth are introducing LE audio and a new audio codec. So the default fallback for Bluetooth is very low quality, as the way that it's implemented is very low quality, and it's kind of a restrictive connectivity source. Bluetooth was originally designed around those single ear earpiece headset kinds of audio quality. And we've been trying to morph the Bluetooth connection into higher quality, higher capacity, and a more robust style audio connection. Varying levels of success. I think some of the more successful things have actually been somewhat proprietary, like LDAC. Great audio codec. But it's not really Bluetooth. So Bluetooth is trying to take the reins. I don't think they're trying to fight on the premium audiophile front, but they're doing some really exciting things with multi-point connections where Gary Explains does a much better job of explaining all this. So you should watch his video. But you can set up a TV with Bluetooth LE, and then numerous people could connect to that TV with their own individual headphones. So it's not just a one-to-one or a one-to-two master-slave relationship. You could have dozens of audio sources all generically connecting to the same audio fog of a signal. But then I want to get back. The next top stories on our Glowing Rectangles, BW1 spending some time with the TCL10. Zach Talks Tech, a follow-up video on the TCL10. And then we've got to climb to, this is the number five story on Glowing Rectangles, is some jerk in a hat talking about using an Intel Nook. Probably one of the more punchable faces on the subreddit. But Gadget Byte in the number six is showing off a OnePlus 7T long-term review. That's a great video. I would highly recommend checking that out. TK Bay going hands-on with the McLaren Concept OnePlus phone. If anyone should be talking about the Concept One, it's TK My Bay. So you can check that out. And wrapping up, we've got Bored at Work checking out the Alienware, the Dell Concept UFO. Basically, Their attempt at making a PC gaming platform like a Switch. It's like if you had a Switch but it ran PC games, that's what they've got to show off there. And lastly, we've got Easy Computer Solutions. Why I'm switching from using a smartphone to a DSLR camera for YouTube in 2020. So you can check out his behind the scenes. And Easy does great content on cameras, so you should absolutely check that out too. I like when we get a sense of how the sausage is made. Easy is showing he's been so so aggressive in using phones to actually produce his content. So it's an interesting conversation when he's talking about switching it up. That's a great mix of topics and content and stuff to check out. I make this plea every week, and every week we pick up a couple new followers, a couple new subscribers. We're getting a lot of people actively sharing content. But if you go to reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles, and if you've never been before, I guarantee you will find content creators you've never seen suggested by YouTube. I guarantee you'll find videos from people you've subscribed to that YouTube did not tell you about. In fact, for a lot of these content creators, I get alerts from IFTTT and from Reddit before I get alerts from YouTube channels that I smashed that bell icon to be notified about new videos. As we continue, if we want to continue getting cool, fresh, exciting content, we've got to be a bit more active than just passively viewing. A passive view, you just watch the content and you enjoy it and you go, hey, neat, that guy's cool. Not enough to really sustain a content creator in 2020. And so it's the participation, it's finding an outlet to share, to talk about, to leave comments, to thumbs up. Engaged participation is going to guarantee that you get more cool content from these content creators. And we can facilitate that. My subreddit is one opportunity. You just sharing on your own social media and finding other opportunities to talk about cool stuff is again, that's the goal. We want to find that in engaged participation. So reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles. This is my contribution to sharing and to helping other content creators just find more audience. I hope you'll check it out, and I hope you'll leave some upvotes on some of the other videos that you find there. LFA, I ran into TK Bay at CES, but he was in a hurry and didn't stop to say hello. So let me say, TK Bay is my buddy. The last time we met up at CES, we actually had plans to do quite a bit more, and we both overbooked our CES. When TK Bay goes to a trade show for something like that, he sets up a somewhat unrealistic schedule of all the things that he can accomplish in one day at a trade show. So I wouldn't take that as any kind of personal, like, oh, I'm too busy, I've got to go. Because I think if he would try and keep a more reasonable schedule, he would probably notice that he's a lot more popular on the ground than he thinks he is. LFA, Eric is one of the hardest working creators. He needs far more subs. Completely agree. I mean, again, when I point out these top stories on our glowing rectangles, it is also with the hope that we see some participation and we see some improvement in their metrics and it's funny and sad when you see just like how much really good stuff is getting produced out there that on diverse topics is never going to get the big push. You know, it's not the huge SEO popular trending topic plug, but it's still great content. Let's keep moving right along. Oh, LFA, but he did get to have an actual conversation with Trisha. I'm so glad you got to meet Trisha. Trisha is one of my absolute favorite people on the planet. And again, she's making amazing stuff on a variety of channels that I wish was getting more attention. LFA, I met Trisha at the same party I met Flava Flav. Now, just keep name dropping. Do that, Jeff. Who else famous do you know, LFA? Are they super famous? Like, tell me more about all of the famous people that you know. and people's like, again, I can't say enough nice things about Trisha. I mean, I make the joke like sister from another mister. But like, I really do feel like in some weird cosmic sense, she's my like female doppelganger. There are just so many similarities in like
I should, okay, I'm not gonna go down that road. But but she's very good people, and you should absolutely be following her on a variety of platforms. And if nothing else, just check out her Twitch streams. She's awesome with her audience on Twitch. Excuse me. Sorry. I got to take another sip of water here. I'm trying not to blow out my voice again. Okay. got a little tickle in the back of my throat. There we go. Okay. So I do want to point out this is a gadget topic that I hope means we're going to see some improvement soon. When Android 10 came about, Android 10 nuked one of my favorite features, which was the easy tap and share protocol for sending a file over Bluetooth. So I was always disappointed that not more people were really using this kind of stuff, but you know, you put up a picture on one phone, like you take a picture with a camera, you put it up on screen on your phone, and then you tap another phone to the back of it, and it shares that photo over Bluetooth. And I'd always wished, keep the same protocol, but flip over to Wi-Fi, make a direct Wi-Fi connection, and you could share that content way faster. Well, Google just cut it in Android 10. So that same kind of tap and pair doesn't really work at all anymore. And it's always been a sticking point where Apple has AirDrop. Now, AirDrop doesn't work for me because I don't live in an all AirDrop compatible environment. And whenever I try and send something over Wi-Fi to like my NAS or even to another computer, the iPhone destroys the file, the quality of the file that I'm trying to send by preparing it. It's like 4-to-1 image compression if I try and send a video. So I'm very curious and I'm very hopeful that that might be changing. Now, we've heard news that there's going to be Xiaomi, Oppo, and Vivo are working on their own protocol, but there is something bubbling at Google, and XDA found that they just recently changed the name. Excuse me. This was written up by Amir Siddiqui. I've butchered your name and I apologize. Fast Share, Google's upcoming AirDrop-like service, gets renamed to Nearby Sharing ahead of release. I really hope this is about to be released. One of the things that just works within Apple's ecosystem is AirDrop, the file sharing solution available on iOS and macOS. I'm going to skip through all this. Android had an NFC-based solution in the form of Android Beam, but the feature was deprecated entirely in Android 10. The absence of a true AirDrop competitor on Android prompted Xiaomi, Oppo, and Vivo to come together to announce their own cross-device file-sharing solution. Now, FastShare is being renamed to Nearby Sharing. It uses Bluetooth to initiate a handshake between devices and then subsequently transfer files over a direct Wi-Fi connection. This will allow for larger files to be transferred much more quickly than Android Beam. Google has yet to announce or release this feature, but it has been in development for quite some time now. After it was first spotted, the feature received a revamp to its share sheet, and its position within the settings menu spotted in September 2019. Then in November 2019, Michal found that the feature received some UI changes along with a new icon. So once we get some updates to Google Play services, the Fast Share rebrand is going to be called Nearby Sharing, and hopefully we won't have to continue futzing with third-party solutions or just like proprietary solutions. Like right now, because I don't have Android Beam anymore, I'm doing a lot of juggling. Like I'll upload a file to my NAS and then download it again because that's faster than a direct paired Bluetooth. I was using Super Beam for a long time, but I think it got busted with the Android 10 update. I'm trying to think. I think LG is going to be terminating AirDrive, but that was more, I think, a protocol to send to PCs. So you'd run like this crap LG program on your desktop and then send that way. Samsung had a proprietary protocol for a while too. It'd just be nice. It'd be really nice to just get rid of all of that and go to sort of a universal solution for Android. At some point, it would be really nice if an iPhone could figure out how to wirelessly send a file to any other computer, like a PC or an Android phone. But at least if we could get Android and Windows working together better, that would be really nice. Be very helpful. LFA Reviews has gotta go take a conference call. Thank you so much for dropping by, LFA. I'm so glad you had a good time at CES. And I'm looking forward to many, 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 many more headphone reviews coming your way in 2020. So thanks for dropping by. Resilio Sync, BitTorrent Sync. There have been a couple other sort of Wi-Fi and Wi-Fi Direct options. It's just there's no backbone when there's not one unifying protocol. And it should come from the company what makes the operating system. Then you kind of get stuck. And I just want to show this off real quick. We don't have to spend too much time talking about it, but Andrew Wallace, Fat Produce, dropped this in the Some Gadget Guy Discord. Someone on Reddit has been tinkering with the LG G8X and apparently using the dual screen setup, they have figured out a way to emulate. Ooh, look at that. Some Nintendo dual screen action. See, this is the kind of stuff I want to see with dual screen devices. What I really want is this type of setup for video editing, where I can use one whole screen as the preview window and then the bottom screen as the timeline and all of my editing tools would make me very happy. But baby steps. If you wanted to emulate a Nintendo DS, the LG G8X is the best device to do it on because of the two screens. It's amazeballs. I really miss my G8X. I'm not using this iPhone 11 Pro Max as much as I really thought I would be in trying to finish up my longer review on the iPhone 11 Pro Max. I kind of feel like I would have had a few other G8X videos out there instead, and I'm just underwhelmed with the most expensive non-folding phone of the year by way of Apple. And Sam, 20 miles, actually has a G8X. So Sam, get after that. Do some Nintendo DS emulation and let us know if it's really as difficult or as easy as those people on Reddit are making it out to be. So we're getting into the last half hour of the podcast. I am going to take one prolonged sip of water and I'm going to mute my mic because this is going to sound kind of gross here for just a second. Wait. Ah, that was awful. Okay, so last week I front-loaded CES talking about some of the early press releases that I had gotten from a handful of companies that, again, not like winners or losers, best of CES, nothing like that. Just some interesting trends that I saw in consumer electronics, especially with a gadget focus. I don't really keep much of a beat for home automation or appliances and IoT. So I wanted to follow up the second half of this CES, the post-CES conversation. When we talked last week, one of the companies, one of the brands that I was really excited to see refresh their product was Nuhera. I actually did review their IQ Buds, and it's both exciting and terrifying that hearables are going to be a hot new product moving into the future. It's using true wireless earbuds as a halfway point between audio entertainment devices and traditional hearing aids. It's a stark commentary on where we're at right now and how scary it is to see the rates of hearing loss continue to rise across all demographics, at least in the data that I can find. So I wanted to follow that up because there were two other announcements. Engadget actually did a really good job of covering two other products in the same space. Let me go into screen share here real quick. The first one is Phonak, I believe Phonak, like Hooked on Phonak. I don't know why I keep saying it with an up inflect, Phonak. Phonak Virtu Black Hands-On, a hearing aid that gives you superpowers. So they've got their true wireless earbuds, individually customized and molded to your ear canal. So this is very much more like a hearing aid where you would want that biologically organic fit but it's more focused on being able to pick up sound around you. This is notable because not only do the earbuds themselves process sound, there is also a version of this system where there's a microphone puck. So let's say you're in a busy cafe. This is something I have trouble with. I'm in a busy restaurant or a busy cafe, and all of the general conversation noise, you know, tile floors, reflective surfaces, it's very difficult for me to pick out a voice even when someone is sitting right in front of me. And that's why I kind of read lips as much as I'm actually hearing the conversation. So not only would I have these earbuds in and I'd be able to kind of minimize the noise around me, I could put that puck nearer the person I'm talking to, or even have them wear that puck, and the microphones in that puck will send a direct audio signal right back to my ears of what they're saying. I think we're going to see a lot of very novel microphone modeling techniques. This is actually something that you can kind of pull off with iPhones and with Apple's whatever proprietary wireless chip they're on now. I don't know if it's the W or the H. I can't remember what's current. But there is a setting in the accessibility settings where you can turn your iPhone into a microphone, which sends a wireless signal back to your ears. But there isn't any consideration for noise reduction in that mic, in that master-slave relationship. Moving forward, I think we're going to see a lot of very interesting solutions for being able to use entertainment noise reduction to better isolate human speech or to just highlight, you know, novel sounds in our environment. The phonic is another step in that direction. I envision that there could eventually be something where, as we were talking about Bluetooth LE from Gary Explains, what if we could just set up a one-to-one Bluetooth call? So I'm not calling you over a phone, just my Bluetooth LE audio earbuds and your Bluetooth LE audio earbuds link directly. And then as long as we're within 20 feet of each other, we can have a direct one-to-one conversation over our earbuds using the mics built into the earbuds and using all of the noise reduction sound processing in those earbuds. That's exactly the kind of hearing assistance future that I think we're in for, I don't know, say 2022, 2023, somewhere in there. I think that's just going to become a common feature, Bluetooth link, and then you can have a conversation with your earbuds. That's the kind of stuff that gets me really excited for where this type of wireless audio processing could go. From Kyle Ruggles, if you research Oticon bone anchored hearing implant, they've been doing this puck for years. I'll check it out. I've never heard of that brand. But an anchored hearing implant, again, something that we might, if it's like a cochlear, that's a bit much for someone who's still got quite a bit of their hearing left. But, you know, what I'm excited about is finding more consumer grade options for this type of audio processing. Cause again, I don't know if they said what the price was on these. Let me see if I can look it up. Oh, see, okay. So this is where audio tech is going to get you. So the Virtu Black, fully molded with that puck, is going to be somewhere in the range of $6,000. So we're in premium hearing aid territory. Actually, not even premium. We're in like upper mid-range hearing aid territory. So that's a bit pricey. I missed that when I was doing my research on this. But that's unfortunately, like, that's really what this stuff costs when you want to go medical grade for hearing assistance. The other one, this one I did look up the pricing on because I thought it was an interesting solution. And one that does compete more in the range of true wireless was Olive Union. This is another Engadget write-up. They covered these two really well. They actually got some hands-on time with both. But this is a closer, more direct competitor against like what I was doing with the new Hira. When the new Hira launched, they were $500 earbuds. They've had a couple sales. Like, they've dropped in price to like $350, I think, was the cheapest. And the starting price for the Gen 2 is going to be around $350, $400. So we're seeing progress, like getting really detailed audio manipulation and processing to lower and lower price points where it's all mobile. It's all just the tech built into these earbuds. So all of Union is playing in that same ballpark. It's a single ear solution. So for $250, it's a one ear audio processing unit. And again, the ideal would be, let's say you've got uneven hearing loss. I hear up to 17K in my left ear. I'm about 15.5 in my right ear. My right ear, I had a perforated tympanic membrane when I was a kid. I have a bunch of scar tissue in both my ears from a lot of earaches and fevers when I was younger. I had a lot of ear infections, and when I think I was in New Mexico again, so I think I was a sophomore or a junior in high school. I just got water in there. It got lodged behind the ear, and like a dumbass, I tried to just kind of clean around it, and the pressure of putting a Q-tip into the ear canal lightly punctured my eardrum. And so I have a significant degradation in upper frequency hearing in my right ear as compared to my left. We all probably have some kind of uneven wearing of our ears. I mean, just think about your own personal preferences. I listen to phone calls on my right ear. I do more. I listen to podcasts. When I go one ear, I focus on my right ear. My left ear is my good ear. But I do, like, I put all of the heavy lifting on my right ear. So as like I continue to lose hearing, it's going to be imbalanced. Like, I'm going to lose more hearing in my right ear faster than in my left ear. So this is what the Olive Union is trying to help balance back out. If you have significantly more hearing loss in one ear, you would just get one of these things and pop it in the ear that you have issues with. And I guess what you could do, you could get two, and that would be around $500. But for $250, you get a one-ear earbud that is doing a lot of the same things that we saw with the new Hira buds, and in that price tier. In fact, they look very similar to the new Hira buds too. But what we're doing is we're trying to take that noise reduction technology for headphones and just try and give us better solutions to minimize noise in our environment and pick out the frequencies of sound that we are struggling to hear consistently here. Hey, podcast listeners. I work really hard to find mutually beneficial ways to support production on my various distribution platforms. Instead of just running ads on this podcast and hoping they don't annoy you, I want to find products or services that you really will get something out of and that can help fund my production. While I do talk about some of those items in ads throughout this podcast, I've never created one easy-to-view master list of my current partnerships until now. Sorry, I couldn't help myself. If you'd like to help contribute, support production of this podcast and my various videos and reviews, head on over to somegadgetguy.com. At the top, there's going to be a link for Support Some Gadget Guy, and you can see what my current partnerships are. At the time this podcast was recorded, in addition to my Patreon and my Audible campaign, I can hook you up with a $20 voucher if you're shopping a new OnePlus, or you can grab a ton of great video games for cheap with Humble Bundle Monthly. I also have a teaser image on that page for my upcoming Mega Pickle coffee mug, which will hopefully be available for purchase soon. SomeGadgetGuy.com, link at the top of the site, support Some Gadget Guy, and hopefully you find something cool, something you might like, while also kicking me a little extra scratch. From Kyle Ruggles, ear infections weren't uncommon in the early 80s. That's what led to me being deaf in my right ear. wrong medication and only found out 10 years later and it was too late to sue. And whether it was negligence or, you know, malpractice or any of these other situations, I mean, just think, like, we're still having a hard time today taking ear health seriously. In the 80s, it was like, nah, we'll just put some tubes in his ears. And you're like, oh, okay, cool. My wife found out in her late 30s that one of the tubes that they put in her ear as a kid never came out. Like, it should have just fallen out at some point. So she went, hold on, let me try and do the math on that. She went 31 years with this childhood tube still sort of stuck in her ear. No other doctor caught it. Like, even during like a basic checkup, they shove an otoscope into your ear. No one noticed. It's fine. So I'm really excited to see some other players in this space and some other companies taking this stuff seriously. It's shocking. Like, we really don't take our ears seriously, but hopefully that's changing. All right. Get this out of the way here. Oh, and Kyle Ruggles is throwing this one last bit out here. Enjoy that y'all have two functioning ears. The music I missed out on when I was younger before I downmixed my MP3s to mono, you'll miss so much. And again, for Kyle Ruggles on Wii there, I'm trying to see if we can't head off some of this. It's never too early to start developing good habits, especially if you're younger. And if you're older and you've already suffered some hearing loss, it's never too late to protect what you still have. And not just like, oh, you know, I'm going to make you eat your vegetables. When you take those steps and you start using better products or products that fit you better or just higher quality audio kit in general, your enjoyment of audio goes up too. It's so silly, but like, we get used to things like going to a movie theater and to impress you with the amazing, you know, Dolby sound system that they installed. A lot of movie theaters just overcrank the sound. So your ears dull the audio that you're hearing. And if you just put in some cheap foam plugs, which maybe take what, like 10 decibels, maybe 15 decibels off just all of the sound that's hitting the eardrum. They're not fancy. Not only will you hear the movie better by cutting off just how loud it is, you also block out all of the annoying audience around you that chew with their mouths open or leave their phones on. It's a better experience. And when you leave the movie theater, your ears aren't dulled by the impact of that sound. All of these experiences actually improve the quality of what it is that you're seeking to do. Go to a concert, you don't want to leave with your ears ringing. I promise you, you will enjoy the concert better putting in some basic earplugs. So anyway, that's the plug. And also going to be a major topic of hashtag 2020 hearing for the year 2020. Get this out of the way here. And okay. Excuse me. Getting into the last couple stories here. I wanted to talk about this because I think we're starting to get it. Let me just go into screen share here real quick. I'm not linking to an outlet's write-up on this. I'm linking directly to the Sony website. Because apparently they're not going to sell phones anymore and they're going to make cars instead. So Gorin told us that they're bailing on smartphones and that was a lie. this is the Sony website showing off the Vision S. This is a concept electric car featuring a ton of Sony internal technology. When this first just started hitting Reddit and Twitter, there was that immediate knee-jerk, oh yeah, right, like Sony's really going to make an electric car, which was not the point. And I really have to credit Sony. They didn't go out there to try and blur the lines on whether or not they were going to make an electric car. It's that the state of automobile manufacturing is so behind the current tech trends, is so woefully behind, that they made a platform just so they could show off what technologies they could contribute to the automotive experience. So when we, I would highly recommend just checking out Sony's site on this, sony.net/sonyinfo/vision-s. All we're doing is we're looking at a prototype vehicle, but one where we can talk about how cars can be upgraded and improved in the future, how we can improve safety, and how we can still make the automotive experience entertaining. Sony has some phenomenal technology to contribute in this space, and automobile manufacturers aren't really joining this discussion in earnest. It is shocking how different the car experience is in a Tesla versus a regular mid-priced sedan. So my mom, she's rocking a Tesla Model 3. She loves her car, and she's got it paired with a OnePlus 6T. I love that my mom's a nerd. But I want you to think about, like, your relationship. You own a car. You have to have insurance for that car. Think about how ham-fisted it is to get good DVR-style cameras, dash cams, into a car. I've got a little GoPro puck of a camera glued to the dashboard of my car, and I don't actually have – I've got a backup cam, but I can't use it as a cycling video feed. Like, if I were to get rear-ended, I don't get a video out of that. I'm looking for a better solution. There's a lot out there. I haven't done all my homework yet. But when my car is parked, that camera shuts off. It doesn't actually keep feeding power because I've just got it plugged into the 12-volt, so it only turns on when my car turns on. It's cheap. It works, but it's not great. Automobile manufacturers, they don't have any relationship between you and your insurance. So wouldn't it be helpful if you had a couple like 360 cameras or a couple side cameras? Well, Teslas get that because Tesla was made by a big old nerd, and it's a gadget more than it is a car. Cameras all around the Tesla. If someone if someone vandalizes your car, someone tries to steal your car, there's an instant video feed that you can access that gives you the evidence that you might be able to take to law enforcement. But, you know, GM isn't doing something like that. The VW group isn't really doing anything like that. It doesn't really exist. So it's increasingly we're returning to tech companies to fill in these gaps that the automotive industry doesn't seem much interested to really move on. And that broaches the entire gamut of technology in cars, making it easier to interact with technology when you're operating a motor vehicle, having better safety assistance for things like lane detection, driver distraction, turn-by-turn navigation, and just getting into things like heads-up displays. So a company like Sony, some good resources and some good data to try and help improve some of this situation. Sorry, I got to take another drink of water here. That and their concept is a pretty sexy looking car. I do like the look of their car. So we've got concept videos, the product video, but I did want to just show off the interior because, again, I feel like there's just so much work that we're way behind on. So many of these people, I'm showing this video, I'll probably get a copyright strike on the YouTube version of this. But when we, show me the inside. There we go. So when we get inside and we just see, like, how can we improve on where eye lines are, putting cameras and content where we can better see our surrounding environment, the entertainment. I mean, yeah, they're making this look real fancy and having tablets for the kids in the back seat. But this like the entire wraparound dashboard display where even the passenger has better access to less distracting interactions with how the car can function. This is the kind of stuff like we really need to start building towards. It makes the driving experience safer and more entertaining. And that's the kind of thing that I wish GM and Ford and VW were spending some more time talking about. So, (laughs) Goran Petrovic. I really didn't want to annoy anyone, but Juan cares so much about Sony, I underestimated his love. Come on, man. DCJ reviews, the audio industry is grossly behind in tech. That what we have is nice, but not what it should be. Kyle Ruggles, where are the airbags? Behind the tablet screen? Well, actually, I mean, you can do some crazy stuff with, I mean, even my little Versa had ridiculous curtain airbags that popped out from all sides. So I don't think I'd be too upset there. But I would recommend just checking it out. The Sony website, not the CES write-ups, their actual platform car was out on a stage. It looked really cool. But if we don't request these kinds of features, if we don't shop these kinds of features, like actually put money towards buying, you know, automobiles with this kind of tech, we're going to keep getting the same sort of half-hearted entertainment systems. Oh, we've got a new option where you can put Android Auto in a tiny little touchscreen that you can't see if the sun is in your rear view mirror. Isn't that futuristic? Because it's not. I mean, I get into my Nissan, and the only thing I use in my Nissan is there's a USB plug that I keep a flash drive for music for Lex. That's the only thing I use in the Nissan Dash head unit. I also have a little air conditioner clip smartphone mount, and I do everything on the phone. And then there's a Bluetooth audio connection to the car's stereo system. And that's my entertainment and navigation solution in my car, is whatever phone I've got in my pocket just becomes the brain of my car. I mean, if I could have just gotten Bluetooth connector. And actually, what would be helpful is just screen share. If I could just plug my phone into that head unit and then the screen just popped up and I didn't have to deal with any of Nissan's computing or processing, and all of it was just mirrored off of the phone, would be way preferable to what I currently have. So that's I have a fairly recent car. It's just so frustrating that's what we're stuck dealing with. Kyle Ruggles, will all these tech advances beat out self-driving cars? Because what's the point of all the tablet screens if you're not really driving? How will it look in 5 to 10 years? Especially after driving around in the Tesla, I'm still very disappointed in the Tesla tablet design being mounted as low as it is in the cockpit, but it wasn't as difficult to operate as I thought it would be. The general idea, if you have a wraparound tablet dash, you have more peripheral surface for your eyes to interact with for briefer interactions. I would still rather have important information projected up at eye level, heads-up display style. But I think what we're going to see is some sort of parity where we'll get a few more features like this, and then a few more cars are going to come out with better autopilot assistance, where I think it's still going to take us a long time to get to fully autonomous vehicles as the norm. But I think what we're going to see is continued steps towards driver assistance. So you get into your car, and you're not responsible for 100% of the car's operation. It's the computer is helping you navigate, giving you better information for what's around you. In the dash, you'll get where your blind spots might be. The sensors will tell you if there's a car floating in your blind spot. That's one of the most helpful things about a Tesla, in my opinion, is you get this infographic as you're driving with, you know, your speed and, you know, if you've got any turn-by-turn or mapping stuff going on. And then they've just got these shadow vehicles on the screen that let you know very quickly at a glance if there's anything floating in your peripheral, peripheral side view. That's what I think is going to be the next big trend, is just the car helping you navigate more and giving you better information to do it with. And then by the time we make it to fully autonomous vehicles, we'll have seen that as a transition, not just, well, I've got a 5-speed manual on a 4-cylinder Toyota from the 1980s to I have a fully autonomous vehicle for my next car. Like, we're never going to see that hard transition where a switch just gets flipped and then magically everyone's cars are self-driving. It's going to be a spectrum, right? We're going to have a lot of different types of vehicles on the road for a really long time. And Kyle Ruggles also bringing up like smart assistants and stuff like that. That's an amazing comment that actually does help move the data integration with assistants around. I'm not going to read his comment. If you're in the live stream, you know what he said. one last thing that I wanted to show off in terms of just gadgets. I'm about to lose my voice again, so we've got to wrap this up soon. And we're getting into the last one. What I was surprised to see a number of outlets promote as one of the most exciting gadgety things at CES was Razer's controller. Apple has a, Apple Arcade, Google Play subscriptions. Mobile gaming is actually in a pretty good place right now. There's still a ton of garbage out there, but there are a lot of really good mobile games that people can play. So when a company like Razer takes this seriously and makes a nice controller, I mean, it's worth pointing out. It's worth highlighting. So this is the Razer Kishi, and it's a universal. There is going to be a model for Android and a model for iOS. So it can connect. There's going to be a separate for whether or not your phone has USB-C or a Lightning connector. But it splits like a Nintendo Switch. That's the big fad right now. And it connects to the phone, making the phone the middle screen of like a Switch-style gaming experience. So this looks really cool. I mean, there are actually a couple of manufacturers, I can't think of any of their names right now, that make similar clip-on controllers that stick themselves to the forehead and chin of your phone to make something like this. And I'm showing on the live stream. Here's a picture of what it's going to look like when you snap the two pieces together for transport. We talked about it a little on All About Android. And the more I keep looking up hands-on videos or people who went to the Razer booth and checked it out, we still don't have good answers for compatibility. And what is this thing going to do to audio? So it plugs in. It plugs into the USB port. Does that mean we're going to have some kind of audio pass-through? A lot of phones don't have headphone connectors. Bluetooth audio on mobile right now is terrible for gaming. There is so much lag, even with the best aptX LL low-latency codecs. Every time I say, try and play a game like Thumper, which is all about rhythm, you can't play it over Bluetooth. You need speakers or a cabled connection. So that presents two issues with the Kishi's design. If you want to use the speakers on your phone, well, it looks like the right-hand side joystick is going to block a bottom-facing speaker. And if your phone still has a headphone jack, the top or the bottom pieces are going to block your ability to plug in a headphone jack. So I hope there's some solution for some kind of audio pass-through. Like if the charge port also can be an audio output, then you can plug a USB DAC into the controller's hand grip, and that way you can better hear the audio that's coming off of the game. I like that it's cool. Again, we want to make everything sort of Switch style. I get that. That's fun. But I still don't see where this is going to be any better than just a traditional controller. This is my SteelSeries. It's got a little clip, which unfortunately is way across my office, but you clip this little plastic rig to the bottom, and then a phone holder sticks out the front, and you can stick your phone in and you can game just like that. We talked about different types of controllers for mobile gaming on All About Android's broadcast last week too. That to me is more accessible, and I think you can get the, which one do I have? I have the SteelSeries Stratus Duo, which has support for both Windows and Android. I think it also connects to iOS. I don't actually know if it connects to iOS. But PC gaming and mobile gaming. You flip a little switch and it connects over Bluetooth. You flip another switch. It's got its own little USB plug that has its own separate wireless connection for lower latency input. Works great. And I think you can pick those up for like $40. I think it's, you can pick up the controller for $40 and then you add $10 for the phone clip and you've got a mobile gaming rig and it works really, really well. We were using that to play Tesla versus Lovecraft on an LG G8X connected to my parents' TV. So you just pass the controller around and then they'd game for a little while and pass the controller and like, oh no, I died again. Ha 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 ha. And it was just like gaming on a console. It would have been just the same as if we'd had Tesla versus Lovecraft on a Nintendo Switch. It was great. And it's cheap. So I'm curious. I really hope Razer has some of these questions answered. Because again, the gaming control looks awesome. Phone compatibility looks great. The way that you would hold it and game on it, Motorola tried something like this with Moto Mods. Other manufacturers have tried these clip-on controllers. But they keep... I still haven't found that solution, which takes game audio into consideration. And audio matters in gaming. It's just surprising to me that there's been very little word about how this might impact that kind of solution. The other thing too being is just if the controller snaps directly to the phone, you might not be able to use it with a case. Like let's say you've got a really big rugged bumper case on your phone, you'd have to take the case off before you could use the Razer Kishi, where again, something like my Steel Series, you just pop the phone in a cradle or you prop it up or you, it works fine. I don't have to take the case off. So, so that's the kind of, I worry sometimes when we look at something cool, but then we don't actually look at how it might be used. And I'm always going to be the audio nerd, I guess. Like I'm going to be that guy who's like, yeah, but what about the speakers? Oh, yeah, gaming. You'd probably want to hear your game. Huh. Nah, you'll get used to it. Okay. So, before my voice completely fails, I think that's as good a point as any to wrap up. I just want to make one last point. CES, is one of my favorite shows to go to because it's like right in my backyard. It's a 4-hour drive through beautiful desert country. And I did miss getting to hang out with all of my work friends. You know, it's like trade shows are where I get to hang out with people. Covering CES remotely, it really did drive home. We do a terrible job of highlighting what CES does well. CES is a future trade show. And so a lot of the stuff that you see there ends up being vaporware, but it's where concepts and ideas are promoted that eventually find their way into consumer products. It's really difficult to produce content on CES because you need to write about products that get clicks. But you know, when you go through like the innovation village where everyone's just got like a little teeny mall kiosk and you see some of the outlandish stuff, like that's where I first used a wearable subwoofer, the Lofelt, you know, just the absolutely insane concepts that people come out with that will probably never have a major consumer push. That's where there's still this exciting lifeblood of innovation and disruption and where some crazy idea is going to come out of nowhere and shock the consumer landscape. But it's really hard to write about that and fulfill like traffic and get viewers' eyeballs on videos and stuff like that. You might get like a top 5 weirdest things we saw at CES. You know, like, oh, this is a robot that folds your laundry. Wah, wah. So that's the thing I actually missed, you know, like getting to walk around the show floor and feel that excitement and all of the people there and getting some hands on with some of the crazy stuff, like getting to use Focals for the first time. I did that at last year's CES and it was buried in an Amazon showroom. You know, here are all the Amazon Alexa products, and here's all of the smart speakers, and oh, and over here there are some glasses that you can look through. But oh, look at this. We want to put a you know, Amazon in your car. And you're like, if I hadn't done that, I never would have gotten on, you know, I never would have had the Focals on my radar as a real consumer product. And I love those things. So it's frustrating because, like, you're going to see a bunch of editorials about, like, oh, CES was sort of a dud this year. And we've been saying that for the last couple of years. But when you're actually there, you have a much different impression of what it was, of what it was like to walk through those hallways and go through those convention centers. That I wish we had some better way of kind of sharing the excitement of that without just turning everything into kind of a gimmicky lifestyle vlog, which I'm probably going to do for Computex again. I had a lot of fun just going, hey, I'm at Computex. I'm going to just talk about being at Computex. The few things that we did see sort of filter out, some of the home automation, some of the lifestyle tech, you know, like the vacuum cleaners that are getting smarter about learning the layout of your home and where it gets stuck and how to better navigate obstacles. Samsung had a robot ball. I mean, we've seen a bunch of these, you know, like from Sphero to today. I guess a robot ball is kind of cool, but I mean, like, while there, that was probably a really fun thing to play with. So hopefully, as we go through future announcements and future product details, CES kicks off a year. MWC is right around the corner, and I'm sure we're going to see some crazy smartphone announcements over the next month for leading up into the early first quarter smartphone sales. And then it's just the rest of the race, you know, getting through the summer, getting to IFA and Computex. And this is going to be an exciting year because we're also going to have a lot of gaming stuff coming up too. So hopefully we can cover it. Hopefully we can share some of the excitement of what that's actually like and share good information on what products we'll actually be able to get our hands on. So folks, that's my final word on CES 2020. The things that I thought were really interesting were all more sort of lifestyle focused, and then obviously a lot of audio tech that I hope really will make it into consumers' hands. If you're watching this after the fact or you're catching this on one of the other stream platforms, drop a comment. What were some of the things that you saw? What were some of the things that you hope to get your hands on soon? And then also, what are some of your hopes and fears for some of the other trade shows coming down the pipe? E3, got big console announcements. MWC, we've got next-gen Qualcomm tech and 5G finally starting to percolate. I think we're going to have some interesting conversations. Not all of them just, oh, wow, amazeball, so exciting. We're going to have some criticisms too. But I hope we can focus on the net positives a bit more. I get cranky, especially towards the end of every year. I've got to like sum up my feelings for the year. And I get real persnickety about that kind of stuff. But I'm going to make an effort, while I'm still covering tech and politics, I'm going to make an effort to try and focus a bit more on the stuff that I think is cool and less on, well, I've got to tell you why this doesn't work, because that's tired and that's kind of played out. So, folks, thank you so much for joining. And thank you so much for this amazing chat in the live stream. I can't thank you all enough for continuing to join these conversations and to contribute to these discussions. I hope this is a weekly conversation that you'll be game to continue moving into the future. So folks, thanks so much for watching, for sharing, for participating, hitting that subreddit, reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles, upvoting the content that you want to see more of and leaving comments on creators' content if you like what they do. And then also be on the lookout, because we're going to have a lot of health tech coming your way. And hopefully we can move the needle on some stuff that I think has been ignored for far too long. Hashtag 2020 hearing. All right, folks, thank you so much for watching, for sharing, participating. You know where you can find me around the rest of the internet. I'm at Some Gadget Guy pretty much everywhere else. YouTube.com, Juan Bagnell, SomeGadgetGuy.com, the official website and blog where I'm doing a bit more writing on some of these topics. And I'm going to have a bunch of stuff coming out soon. Some headphone reviews. I've got some microphone. I've got a really cool iPhone mic. I kind of... maybe trashed the iPhone 11 Pro recently for being a pro device, but putting my money where my mouth is, there are some solutions to better improve things like audio recording on the iPhone that I think are worth talking about. And then I'm going to have a write-up on using the Xperia 5 with Android 10. My first experience using Android 10 on this new super skinny Xperia form factor, so be on the lookout for that too. And of course, Newegg. I'm going to have some content out for Newegg. I'm going to be doing a couple other podcast appearances on a couple other shows, and hopefully get back into some more TV production soon. So I kind of took a little bit of a break there too. So a lot of stuff coming your way, and I hope you dig it, because I think it'll be fun. I want you all to have a fantastic week with your technology. I want you to do awesome with your technology. I want you to be awesome with your technology. And I'll catch you back here next Monday morning for another episode of the Monday Morning Tech Chat Show on the SGGQA podcast channel. Thank you so much. I love you all. Take care. Be well. Recording voiceover, spoken word, is truly one of my favorite activities. My second favorite hobby is photography. Now, the smartphone might be making us deaf, but we can't deny the awesome power of the phone as a platform for photography and multimedia creation. If you've been looking to improve your mobile photog skills, if you want to produce more professional content, or you're just looking to take your family photos to the next level, I wrote a book to help you out with that. Take Better Photos, Smartphone Photography for Noobs, is available on Amazon Kindle. Walking through the basic terminology of photography, covering the settings on your camera, discussing composition and inspiration, and I even include a long list of exercises and challenges to really hone your skills, all with some helpful example photos and diagrams. Search for Take Better Photos, Smartphone Photography for Noobs on Amazon, or use the quick link bit.ly/betterphotosbook to grab your copy today.